Welcome to Dead Pilot Society, the show that takes comedy pilots from A-list writers that were sold and developed at networks and streamers but never produced, and gives them the table reads they never got a chance to have. I'm Andrew Reich, the creator and host of Dead Pilot Society, and this is it. This is our last episode of Max Fun Drive 2023. It's my interview with Brooks Whelan and Isaac Rentz, and it's my last chance this year to ask you to become a member. If you're here, you probably listened to some of the Wheel and Motors episodes. You heard my pitch. Hopefully you went to MaximumFun.org/join and became a member or renewed or upgraded your membership. But I know some of you didn't. I know our numbers. I know how many people listen. I know how many members we have. So I know there's people out there that haven't done it yet. You've been waiting. Here is your chance. We're doing pretty well. We got off to a strong start, but it's slowed down a bit. I'm hoping we can finish strong. I'm going to try to keep these breaks short so you can enjoy this really fun conversation, but I really hope that you will take a minute, and it really only will take a minute, to become a member for just $5 a month by going to MaximumFun.org/join. Here is my interview with Brooks Whelan and Isaac Rentz. Brooks, Isaac, so good to see you guys again.
Yeah, great to see you. That was fun. Thanks for having us at, what was that, a few weeks ago? It was super fun.
Yeah, I know. What, how have you been feeling about it? I know, Brooks, you were kind of like, is this going long? It seems like it's long, but I really don't feel like it was. But other than that, how are you guys feeling post-read?
I feel good. You know, it just was... I'm sure it's not long to listeners of this because you broke it up into three episodes, but like in the room, we banged all those out in a row and I'm like, okay, this is running long. And as like a guy, I produce a lot of stand-up shows and I'm always like 90 minutes tops. And, you know, when we blew 90, I was like, we still have a full episode to go. Okay.
Yeah. You know, these are, you know, it often happens with these scripts because they haven't had to be cut down to time that even though they're theoretically like these were 22 minute episodes of television in theory, they're quite a bit longer than that because you haven't had to cut them down yet.
Right. For sure. And where everyone's like, walking up. Yeah, it was fun, though. It was awesome. It was a good way to say later to 2 years of our lives, I think.
it was two years.
Yeah, it was a nice piece out to that project. So thanks for giving us closure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go back to the beginnings of that. First of all, so Isaac, for those who don't know, Isaac's a big director, commercial director, music video directors, directed feature films. So as a writer, like had you been writing before you and Brooks started writing together? Like what's your, you know, writer story?
Yeah, well, you know, Brooks and I started working together on a feature script a couple years ago.
Yeah.
That worked better as a TV show. And that was kind of the beginning of how we worked together. I'd always thought he was really funny.
Isaac and I had met Isaac. I was engaged to Isaac's cousin, where she's great. But that's how I met Isaac. She was like, hey, my cousin directed this movie called Opening Night. And like anytime your girlfriend's like, my cousin directed a movie, do you want to go see it? You're usually just like, ugh, okay. And we went and it was fucking awesome. And I was like, I got to work with this guy. He's really talented.
Yeah. It was, you know, thank you, Brooks. That's really nice of you. Yeah, we kind of met in a, I guess, not a very ordinary way, but.
Yeah. Like, yes. So like after me and Isaac's cousin split up, like Isaac and I just kind of, I was probably drinking a little too much at the time. I was pretty bummed, you know, a relationship. It was a bummer. But Isaac was like, just come over, let's jam on something. And then we wrote this movie and then we sold it as a TV show. And that was the first thing we ever did together. Mm-hmm. And then from that, we've been jamming since.
Yeah, that was before Wheel and Motors. We showed it to we sold it to Pop, the ill-fated network that no longer exists. They got rolled into Comedy
Viacom. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was a really good experience and we liked working together and I feel like we kind of have similar sensibilities and we're a little bit of yin to the other's yang or whatever. Like,
yeah, when we get notes, Isaac is really good at being like, calm down, Yeah. He's more of the responder to notes, and
you need that in the partnership. You can't have two hotheads. It's like no, you need this, someone who's just like, come on, these are addressable. Let's just sleep on it.
I talk Brooks off the ledge.
Yeah. But it's we just work together really well, which is fun. And then we both have individual projects, and they're just not as fun. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure like anybody who writes, it's fun to write with a buddy. And then, you know, you have a thing, you're like, well, I want to do this one alone. And halfway through, you're like, well, what would Isaac think about this? Like, I had to read something the other day, and I'm like, what'd you think about that?
And it's funny because I've never collaborated with anyone. Like, up until Brooks, like, all of my directing was, you know, just me working. I mean, obviously with a crew and stuff, but it's become really fun to have somebody to bounce things off of. And
yeah,
and we just have a good time.
Yeah, I'd written alone my whole life until I got SNL. And then once I got hired to write at Saturday Night Live, they were pretty mean and told me I wasn't funny and made me feel like I needed to collaborate. And so, after SNL broke me pretty good, I was like, I need someone around. My own ideas are bad, according to
Lauren Michaels.
According to Lauren, so Isaac was a great guy to bounce ideas off.
Had you up until SNL? I mean, had your writing just been like sketches and short form and stand up, or had you been writing scripts?
I'd never written a sketch my whole life until I got to Saturday Night Live. It was the first sketch I ever wrote. I was writing half hour comedies. I'm obsessed with. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. My whole reason in moving to Los Angeles was to create my own It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That show came out perfect time for me, like 19. Seemed like I could make it. You know what I mean? Seemed doable. Yeah. So when I moved out here, I wrote like three or four scripts about, you know, like each age I would, you know, each time the Brooks character would get a little older. But I was writing alone, writing half hour dark comedies, very much in the vein of Wheeland Motors. Like, that's what I came out here to do. And then was doing stand up because I also enjoy that.
It's funny to think of It's Always Sunny. It's like the Ramones of TV writing. It sort of just like makes people think like, wait a minute, like I could do that. Like, you know, they're not like virtuosos. It's done real cheap.
Unfair. Yeah. Like, I think it gives everybody the idea that you can go into a network and just be like, well, it's five really terrible people and they just kind of hang out. And that's like enough of a pitch to get a show off the ground.
Right. Well, they made, I mean, not to be like a It's Always Sunny history podcast, but I mean, like, they shot their own stuff and like they did it. Like, I don't think it was that easy for them.
Thanks, Brooks.
Yeah.
And then, so Isaac, what writing had you done? Like,
Before Brooks, like, I mean, a lot of it was just for short form stuff like commercials and music videos. So I'd always been a huge fan of TV. I feel like both Brooks and I kind of came of age during like a golden age of TV situation comedies and stuff like that. And, the first show that we sold to Pop, I remember we were both kind of like, do we know how to do this? And that
that was the fourth show I've sold.
Yeah.
Wheeling Motors is the fifth show.
I was like,
that was my fourth show.
Yeah. That was where I kind of learned how to do it. Yeah. And so by the time we sold this show to Fox, I think, you know, we both had kind of figured out how to work together and I had figured out how to really write a show.
Yeah. The shows I had sold before, I'd sold either by myself. And that was like an early one to Comedy Central. And then the other two, I was paired with like senior writers, you know, and these are right after SNL. And those guys were kind of, you know, they were there to help, but they weren't there all in the way that when Isaac and I sold the show, it was like, we're both all in, this is our only thing. And that's what I really loved about working with Isaac.
Those other guys were just like supervising you.
Yeah, which is cool and rad, but like it's fun when somebody else is like, you know, like you hang out with them after work too.
Right. Yeah. So Isaac, when you say that golden age of like, what were the shows for you? Was It's Always Sunny a big show for you too? Or what were the shows that you, were like inspiring you to want to be in this?
I mean, it's not entirely original answers probably that you haven't gotten a million times on this podcast, but Simpsons, Seinfeld, Arrested Development, The British Office, we talk a lot about South Park episodes that we really love. I mean, it was a lot of stuff from that era. I think that was one of the things that kind of led to us being excited about Wheeland Motors, in particular doing it at Fox, was because they had such a pedigree of like great dysfunctional family sitcoms.
Yeah.
When we were growing up, we talked a lot about Malcolm in the Middle, Married with Children,
Titus, Arrested Development. Like, we were like, dude, this show's perfect for Fox. And then we forgot those shows are all 20 years ago.
Yeah.
That's not what they do anymore.
Yeah. We're like, now it's the Masked Singer and Lego Wars.
Yeah, which is great.
Great. Yeah.
But I'm just like,
is it great? Is it great?
Well, we're pitching to them, so it's fantastic. Yeah. All right, we're pitching them our new show. So.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. So you guys meet through the cousin. You start, you know, writing together. And so then, okay, so there was a show, the first show you two wrote together that you saw the pop was what? Like, what was that show?
It was very fun. It was called Midwest Best. It was based on, I'm obsessed with this documentary, The King of Kong. Do you know it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's just about people unfamiliar. It's this guy who thinks he can be the best Donkey Kong player in the world and unknowingly steps into just a hornet's nest of psychosis that is video gaming. And so I pitched it to Isaac, and we just sat at his house and wrote Midwest Best, which was pretty much just kind of a ripoff of that, only it was about stand-up comedy in Cedar Rapids in the small town comedy scene. And it was about a guy trying to win on his 10th and final try the Cedar Rapids Funniest Comic. And it was just these like unlikable characters, but like you have
it was kind of like we talked a lot about how we loved like Best in Show.
Yeah.
And a lot of those his name's escaping me now. I should know this.
Oh, it's
great. Christopher Guest.
Yeah. Like a lot of his like mock documentaries where it's like people taking something really seriously that's not that serious. And you know, Brooks grew up doing comedy in Iowa.
In Cedar Rapids. Yeah. So the guys take it really serious there. So basically the crux of this show was I'm this crazy maniac who has been doing comedy way too long, is, you know, thinks he's great, but he's bad. His manager is his cousin, who is an idiot as well. And his cousin is married to this sweet girl who gets annoyed and like is like, I'm just going to do stand up too. And she becomes my villain and I'm out to get her. And that's what that show was. And then I think like 30 stand-up comedy shows came out in a row, like between fucking Hacks, Maisel, crashing. Yeah. And I was like, ooh, woof.
We still wrote a really good pilot, but
I love that pilot. But yeah, by the time
it was a crowded marketplace you were going into by that time. Yeah. And then, so what were the early conversations? Like this seems, and this is so personal, Brooks. This is so much your family. It's like these are your parents' real names, right? And all this, like,
Fox made me change my brother's name. It's like it was everyone's real names. And they were like, it's too confusing. Their names are Brad, Brett, and Brooks. And I'm like, yeah, that's what's interesting about these idiots.
Right. But you know what's funny is while we were writing Midwest Best, Brooks would sometimes tell me, like, oh, my dad, Jim, just texted me something crazy. He's working at a fireworks stand right now or something. And I'd be like, well, that's right there. It's something really interesting we should try to incorporate into this show. And we never were able to, but we were like, we should do something with all of these, you know, weird things that Jim was getting up to in Iowa.
Yeah. And I was always like, so I think I talk about a little bit at the thing, but I always found car dealerships, which were where my dad, I grew up, you know, around car dealerships. My dad managed a car dealership. I always found them so interesting. The characters who work there are so interesting. It's like a job you don't need a resume for. And I was always like, there should be a show about a car dealership. There's so much here. It's also like such a universal thing. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the world, or maybe not the world, at least the United States, has gone through some sort of car buying process. And then I also was like, there's also some sort of show about my family, because my middle brother, he has three kids and he named them Lincoln, Landon, and Layton. And he's repeating the cycle and of what my dad did to us, you know. And then this was just kind of like a Hail Mary, like, let's throw both of these show ideas into one show and make it like a like this has to work because we're out of ideas after this. And it almost did.
Yeah, it definitely came close. So it wasn't like you were, because this seems like this is your most autobiographical, you know, story in a way. It wasn't like you had been thinking about this, but weren't in the place where you felt like you could do it justice. It just hadn't, like, even though it was sort of staring you in the face, it hadn't really occurred to you until you guys started talking about doing it.
Right. Yeah. And it was like the two guys who really helped push me forward to do it were Tim Robinson and Zach Cannon. They like who made I Think You Should Leave and helped me. We would write together at Saturday Night Live a lot. We went out to eat one time because they were just sitting there working on I Think You Should Leave. And I would explain to him about how my dad got in a fight with the band Styx while he was selling fireworks at the Waterloo Walmart parking lot. And they like took me out to lunch and they were like, "You got to make that show, idiot." Like, that's the show. And then they got really busy because, you know, they're incredible writers. And then I was like, "Isaac, we got to make this show, dude. Like, let's go make this show." And then when we did the table read at Fox, Tim Robinson was always, we were always writing for Tim Robinson to play the middle brother. And he did the table read at Fox that we did. But there's no but. Bobby Moynihan, fucking, who read it at the read, was incredible at
incredible.
It.
Incredible. Yeah. I mean, that's what's, you know, to me, what struck me, because I, you know, had watched the table read. And I should say it's an unusual thing. Normally, pretty much every single pilot we've done on Dead Pilot Society is being read for the first time. And, you know, whatever, this one obviously like was read once, but I watched that and like Tim, you know, Tim Robinson's incredible. And you just have him in your head and you feel like, oh, it's got to be him. And then Bobby Moynihan plays it very differently, but also is hilarious. And it's just like, oh, well, that's just that's a good role.
You know, it's a great, like, yeah. I mean, it was such a fun role. Also, the reason we have three of these is because this is Fox's new pilot. This is how they do pilots now. Like, allegedly ours would have been shot had we written it a year ago, but we were the first show that they're like, we can save money if we don't shoot a pilot. We have them. We have these guys leverage every friendship they have to come into Fox in the middle of a Thursday, do the table read only for executives and people who work here. Because at first it was going to be at Largo, and I was like, "Done, smash." But then they're like, "No, they have to come into Fox. It's Fox IP." And so they'll get us to do that for free, as opposed to shooting the pilot, which costs a lot of money. And then they'll just have us write two more episodes without a writer's room. And so they're like, and this is the new way we do pilots. And I'm like, I don't love it. It's not as fun, but I guess thanks. Yeah.
So, all right, let's get to how that happened, because it is so new and kind of odd. But so you guys, you sold this as a pitch, right? You hadn't written it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We went in and we sold it to Fox. Pretty quick. It was great. There were
and the pitch was, you know, tell me a little bit about how you pitched the show.
Pitch was way different, actually.
Yeah, it changed a lot over the course of actually writing it. But I mean, the essence was still there, right? It was, they, I think, were interested in finding a dysfunctional family comedy. And, you know, Brooks started telling them all these stories that had really happened to him in real life. And
yeah,
I think that was something that really appealed to them, that this, you know, was coming from a real place.
Well, at first we didn't set out to make a network comedy, like by any means.
We thought this was going to be way too weird to be on a network.
Yeah, because initially it was even more autobiographical, about a guy who goes to New York, works on a show, doesn't do well, comes home, and everyone there thinks that he thinks he's famous. And he like written a thing. And then at the end of first season, he starts to write about season one and his dad sues him. So season two is his dad and him are in litigation over using the life rights of him and his family. So that was like what the show we were trying to make was, because we were like, we need to make this like FX style show of, you know, like, and then Fox, to their like great credit, was like, hey, ease up on all this like higher narratives. There's like 200 episodes about this family and this car dealership. Just get there as quick as you can. And they were totally right.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's some
credit them. They had like a real vision for it. And, you know, one of the things that was really interesting was on that pitch, we got into a long conversation about how Brooks's, one of Brooks's favorite shows growing up was Titus.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like not a super well-known show, I think, at this point. It only lasted a couple seasons. But like, they had been talking about how in the comedy department at Fox, they loved that show so much and wish they had like a new version of that.
Yeah.
And you were, Brooks was talking about how much that show had influenced him as a kid.
And I will say this, the comedy department at Fox fucking rules.
Amazing. Yeah.
Outside of them, not as fun. They were all about it. This show is like, if you ask the comedy, the people at Fox, they were like, yeah, we want this to go. And then it got down to us. And now this new show coming out called Animal Control. And they were like, we're going to go with Animal Control. And I was like, oh, okay.
Well, rock and roll. We still love Fox and we wish great things.
Yeah, but it was
I'm not expecting you to.
But it was like, it came down to us and that show, and they went with that show. And then I saw a commercial for it the other day, and I did email Fox where I was like, there's a 8-foot yellow rock python around Joel McHale's neck. And I was like, you guys got to see how this is a little upsetting to me.
Might need to edit that.
No, that's true. I mean, if you listen to this show and you watch that show, I'm like, guys, that is in the script that we gave you. It doesn't make me feel good.
Yeah, maybe it makes you think like, hey, yeah, pick up the Python show. And it just was a mix-up. They thought they were picking up Wheel and Motors, but they just got the wrong Python show.
I'm just like, change the color of the snake.
So that's it. So you pitched a show, which is a little bit different. And because I'm always curious how pitches begin. Like when you walk in the room, like how you start a pitch. People ask me about like, how do you do this? Did you just sort of launch into telling your story, Brooks, about growing up in the car dealership? Or do you remember how that pitch started?
Yeah, well, the reason Isaac and I are good at pitches because Isaac is really, he's got a great like creative director brain. So we have like a really solid pitch deck that we go off of and, photos that are in specific stories of the things that happened. And so, yeah, I'm just talking about my family and, and then just showing them literal stuff offline about my family, what the dealership looks like, just, factual information about it. And they were like on board. I think like they came into the pitch one, like hoping that this was going to work, which is, you go into a lot of pitches where they're like looking for a reason not to make it. That sucks. I felt like in this pitch, they were looking for a reason to make it. Mm-hmm. And it was great. It was like a wonderful pitch to where afterwards I was like, so rarely do I leave a pitch thinking like, yo, we sold that. But I did think after we left that pitch.
Mm-hmm. And you did too, Isaac.
Yeah. You know, it was a funny pitch because it was in the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah, it was a Zoom pitch.
It was a Zoom pitch, which is not ideal. We were in separate rooms. I was on vacation. I was driving through Tucson. I was in a hotel room. I mean, every aspect of it was less than ideal. But the second that Zoom started, it just felt like everybody was on the same page.
Yeah.
The comedy department just immediately understood what we were trying to make. And it really was, because we pitched it a couple other places too, and it definitely didn't have the same.
Well, what's actually true is like we like took it out to pitch it, and a lot of people were like, no, we're not really that interested in a car dealership show or whatever. Fox bought it, and then everyone was like, wait, we want to hear that show. Oh
yeah.
Like then we pitched to like seven more networks because Fox was like, this is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I was like, wait, what?
Sure.
And I'm like, yeah, cool. Rock and roll. And I'm like, I always wanted to go with Fox, but I was like, I'm like, well, maybe we get a little bit more money if somebody else wants and they bid for it.
Yeah, of course. You gotta do that.
Yeah.
So at what point do they just ask you to write two more? And where does is that after you do that table read, they ask you to write two more, or that's
journey,
before?
Yeah.
Dude, it was so gnarly, the things that happened. It made the process truly made me miss Saturday Night Live. That's how stressful it got. It was crazy, man. We had to cancel Christmas trips to like get a new draft in. And then like, you work and it's like, we're going to wait for them. So we turn in our pilot and they're like, great, do it again. But do it again now. And we're like, it's like December 22nd. And they're like, yeah, we don't, it's, you know, you guys, do you guys want a show? And we're like, of course, never mind.
Do it again, meaning like do another, do episode two or just
do another pass. Do
okay.
a pretty big sure. rewrite.
Okay.
And so we did this big rewrite over Christmas and we turned that in. And they're like, this is great. This is where we want it. This is awesome. We're not doing pilots anymore. We're doing pilot presentations.
Yeah. Okay. That was like the first thing that came up. That was kind of weird. Cause what they wanted to do, I think they had this idea that pilots are expensive. You can save money if you basically just shoot like half of a pilot. So they're like, can you take your 20 something page script?
35. Yeah. 35, make it have the same story, but in 8 pages.
Yeah.
And 2 locations. So we were like, we wrote that. So we wrote the pilot presentation and that was like, this needs to be done today. And,
I was sweating it. I was like, I've spent years shooting commercials and music videos and a movie and all that stuff. So in my brain, I was like, something here doesn't add up. Like you still have to pay for the crew and the days that you're shooting and stuff. I was like, I don't know how we're going to like make this work for the money. And I think they eventually got to that same place too. And
but it took 4 months of them to learn. I was like on a trip to Miami. So we turn in our finished pilot, I would say January 3rd. Mm-hmm. Then we wait like 2 months before they're like, do the pilot presentation right now. And we're like, okay, yeah. So we do the pilot presentation. Then I think it's like 3 more months of like every Friday at 5. My heart would sink because we didn't get news. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
I knew I had through another weekend of not knowing. Mm-hmm. And each Monday they'd be like, we're probably going to know this week. And that went on for a while. And then I was in Miami. And also shout out to Chad Gidnon, who they gave us as a supervisor, who fucking crushed it helping us write
really
the pilot.
Really talented writer.
The best. We love Chad. And then I get a call from Dave Kneebone, who is the head producer at Abso, who we took this out with, and he's like, okay, so we're gonna move forward. And I'm like, awesome, we're gonna shoot something, you know, because I want to my whole goal is to shoot something. Let's get Heidecker, Robinson, Moynihan, Paul Scheer, let's get us all in a room and shoot something. He's like, we're not shooting anything, we're going to do a table read. Also, this is the first time they've done this. We're gonna do a table read. And you need 2 more episodes in 10 weeks. And to write the pilot, they probably gave us 4 months. And so I was in Miami and I was like, okay, can we get like any help? Like, so, like a writer's room just for a week? Because 2 episodes of TV from zero ideas. And it was a lot. And they were like, for sure. And that never happened.
Can I also ask, was this free work?
No. They had it in the contract. It was called backup scripts.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
they're paying you to write those two, but not as much as to pay the pilot. Like a guild minimum kind of thing?
Yeah, guild minimum.
Yeah.
Yes.
They get around it by calling it backup scripts instead of calling it like
episode two. Yeah, we couldn't turn in episode two. We would turn in backup.
Backup script.
Script two.
B.
Yeah. Right. So we had to call them backup scripts like for legal reasons.
It was kind of amazing. Like it was like a boot camp.
It was, I will say that those 10 weeks of writing episodes 2 and 3 is the most fun I've ever had working in my entire life. Like I loved it. It was like, we were laughing so hard. Nick Rutherford came in and we spent like a full day just developing Lizard World Town. Like I live in Glassell Park and I would go ride my bike to Abso, which is in Burbank. And we would write all day. Mm-hmm. And like, we had these super hard deadlines. And I don't think I've ever been that happy in my whole life. It was so fun. And that's what made it suck too when it didn't go. It was like knowing how much fun this show could have been to me.
We definitely got into like a rhythm where we felt like we understood the characters. Mm-hmm. Like by the time we were done with the second backup script, I think we felt like we could have written 10 more.
Yeah, we were like so excited to start jamming on, you know, new, because like we came up with so many different ideas for those 2 episodes that we had just like the first season ready to rock. We felt, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was so fun.
And Brooks was training like Rocky. Like, oh yeah, because he wanted to look really good for the table read.
The other, the other thing was, so they never met me, in person, and I'm the lead of this fucking television show, and so I'm like, yo, I gotta look good at this table read because this is the first time they'll meet me. So I went on like a fast. And I would ride my bike to work, run 3 miles, then we'd ride all day, then I'd run 3 more miles, then I'd ride my bike home. And yeah, I lost like 20 pounds. And
Brooks was looking like Hugh Jackman in Wolverine. Like, it was, I was like, you don't want to look this good for the show.
It's a comedy. You don't want to look jacked.
Well, I was just like, I need to look like I should be the lead of a television show. You know what I mean? I took it just so serious, and it was a really exciting, I think it comes through in episodes 2 and 3. The pilot to me is like, it's a pilot, you know, it's kind of formulaic. Hey, how's it going? Oh, I'm moving home. You know what? Yeah, I've decided to stay here. But episodes 2 and 3 are where I was like, yeah, this is where I want the show to live.
Right. It gets weirder, you know.
And I think we're like really proud of them too, because they were written on such a short deadline, and just the two of us like banging our heads against the wall, trying to come up with crazy stuff for everybody to do.
Yeah.
And I think there's like something about that deadline that actually made us go with our guts a lot more too, where it was like, we don't have time to overthink this. We just have to go with the joke that made us laugh. Mm-hmm. That's how you get something like Lizard World Town in episode 3, because you don't have enough time to second guess yourself.
Yeah. Right.
And it's ends up being like one of our funniest things.
It's also, that's how you would work if the show went.
Yeah.
That's the actual schedule, except you have a little bit extra time. You know, it's just like,
dude, we,
and some help. Like,
we got the schedule too. So it got so close. They were like, I had to have a talk. We were going to shoot in Atlanta. And since we were shooting in the turn, they would turn around. They were like, it's up to you, Brooks and Isaac. And I wanted to be there for everything, like writing, shooting, and editing. So we decided to do them all in Atlanta. Like, we're at that point of the process, and I have to ask my girlfriend, I'm going to move to Atlanta for like 7 months. Is that okay? And she's like, we'll make it work. Like, that's how like much I thought this show was getting made. And we were kind of being told it was getting made. They were showing us the, like, can you guys meet this schedule? Like the dates, the delivery dates, the air dates, all of it. Jesus. And I'm like, absolutely. Yeah, we just banged out. If you give us one more writer, it will help so much. Like, give us Rutherford. Just let us hire Rutherford.
And that's kind of what led to the table read too. I think they were like, this is faster than a pilot. And this, it obviously cheaper, which I think was really important to them too. I think every network's trying to save money right now. But like, I think their whole idea was kind of like, if it works as a table read, it'll work as a show.
Yeah.
It's like proof that the script works, that like all the characters make sense.
All right, I'm back with a little thought experiment. What if next month and next month's episode I said, hey, listen, I'm sorry, but we just didn't get enough members for this to make sense for us to keep working this hard and keep doing this. So we're gonna call it a day. That's it. That's a wrap. No more Dead Pilot Society. Would you feel like, damn, I wish I had kicked in $5 a month to show those guys that people like the show, right? I mean, I'm not thinking that you're going to like feel like your life is over, but maybe you'd be kind of bummed. Maybe you'd be $5 a month worth to not be bummed, if that makes sense. Don't live with regret. Join, renew, or upgrade today. Where are my Iowans at? You know, we're bringing you this authentic Iowa content. The networks wouldn't bring it to you. We're bringing it to you. It's only here. I'd really like to look and see at that hour, Iowa supporter numbers just blow up. All right, quick reminder on the gifts. $5 a month gets you all of our bonus content, all of the other Max Fun shows bonus content. It is a ton. At $10 a month, you get a really cool Dead Pilot Society sticker. You can stick this. You can unstick it, stick it, unstick it. It's a great design. If any of you have ever gotten the patches or the pins before, you know, Max Fun comes up with some great designs, and this is a really cool one. $20 a month, you get the recipe book, recipes from all the Max Fun hosts, including me, and the Maximum Flavor Spice Blend, which is so good. If you don't cook, you don't want that, you can get the Max Fun Rocket logo hat, which is a great hat. Wear it on all of your walks. Plus, you get the sticker and the bonus content. And $35 a month gets you my favorite of these gifts, which is this Maximum Fun apron. It's a really nice apron. $35 a month. It's not a crazy amount. All right, look, time is running out on our final Max Fun Drive episode. So head on over to MaximumFun.org/join and become a member. Now back to my conversation with Brooks and Isaac.
I have never felt more positive about anything in my life than when we left the table read at Fox.
Yeah.
We went out to Buffalo Wild Wings, me and Isaac and Kneebone, and we were like, we did it. This is going to be a show. Because in our brains, episodes 2 and 3 are funnier, and we just killed the table read for, like, you know, a pretty difficult room of executives.
Because we had to set up that table read. Like, that was not a friendly table read. Like,
no,
it was in front of a bunch. It was in the most boring little box of a room.
With five cameras.
Yeah, shot it. We did not. I thought there was going to be one camera in the back kind of doing like one big wide shot that they could use, you know, if they wanted to like show it to somebody who couldn't be there that day. They had like a five camera setup. They basically almost shot it like a multicam and then cut it together afterwards to be like a little proof of concept thing. So the whole environment was not really set up for comedy. It felt very scary and intimidating for the performers, I think.
Yeah, but then it went off like so well. Yeah. I teared up like in the car, like driving out of there. Like I was like, I think we did it. We just did it, man. And it was just so exciting. And then when we found out, it wasn't like a slow find. It wasn't a quick find out. It was like
drag
3 months of like, we're trying to find room for it, you know, which I'm like, just freaking kill me. You know, like, just like kill the show. To his credit, the president, main guy of Fox, seems Michael Thorne. He called me, and was like, after it didn't go, and he was like, hey, I just want to let you know, like, really wish we could make the show. Sorry, you know, like if there was a way we could make the show, we would. And I, in my head, I'm like, you can't.
Right. You're the person who can.
But I was like, I guess you're just beaten down so much that I'm like, you know, that was a pretty nice call. Like, I was like, I think I told him afterwards, I was like, I respect this call, Mike. Thank you very much. Like, which is like, he's like, what? I don't know. I'm like,
you're so desperate for any little just being treated like a human in those situations at all.
That's exactly what it was. I was like, he knows I exist.
Yeah.
Also, it made it so difficult, I think, for us too, is that the entire way through the process, we were getting great feedback on everything. And they were being very, like,
they were so generous. Nice. Yeah. Like the president of comedy, who's awesome, Julia Franz is her name. And then the VP, who was our like lead person, Elena Romanoff, they took me out to dinner after it was a no to be like, this sucks. We're sorry. You know, we love this project. We're really bummed. Like, that's, you know, that shit goes a long way with me, like, not. I could be, you know, I'm mad that they used a yellow python, but like those people, I'm like, I really like them. You know what I mean?
Sure. I mean, and the people at that level, I'm sure they were super bummed. I'm sure they did love it and really wanted to happen. Yeah. It's not their call. Yeah. You know?
Well, some of them even ended up at the table read that we did for Dead Pilot Society.
Yeah, yeah. They came to the table read for Dead Pilots to be like, really nice. Just like supportive and nice.
Well, and that's the thing too. Like, I think it was disappointing for them. They also felt like they had spent a lot of time with these characters. They wanted to see it brought to life too. You know, it's just as, not just as, but on a smaller level, it is also very disappointing for them, I think.
Yeah.
So
definitely not as much, but certainly it's disappointing. You know, it's not
as much. They didn't get hives.
Yeah.
I got hives at one point. I took a photo of hives and sent it to them. And I was like, you guys got to give me an answer. I have hives right now. Like, please. Like, my body's rejecting the emotion that's going through this.
So, but you hadn't hired like a line producer. You hadn't gotten to that, or had you? Because it sounds like you're getting into like scheduling and all that. Yeah. And
no, we had
sound stages. Like,
we had, they were getting into casting directors,
approved budgets.
Yeah. Like, budgets. Like, it was
the whole thing.
It was there.
Yeah.
I was okaying. I had to sign off on stuff. Like, it was weird. It was into pre-production for sure.
Isaac, were you going to direct?
No, not necessarily. Not the pilot, just because it's more of like a network thing and they have their people. I, you know, at some point I would have loved
to. Oh, it was definitely Isaac to direct. Yeah, for sure.
At some point. I wasn't like attached to direct the pilot.
Though. Yeah, but we're like, whoever you want for the pilot. We're basically whatever you want for the pilot.
You're like, bring in Seth Rogen to direct the pilot. I won't as long as this gets made. Like,
yeah. And did you have thoughts, like, I mean, from your director's eye, like, on how this was going to be shot? Just because, you know, it's not a mockumentary, doesn't have voiceover. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the real successful single cameras do one of those tricks or have some other gimmicky visual thing.
Yeah,
we had talked. Well, I mean,
we pushed back. Like, Tim Heidecker was a producer on it as well, and he was like, because at first we were going to do flashbacks, you know, and he was like, no, it's kind of a crutch, you know. We're like, like the intro will be a commercial for Wheeland Motors or whatever, and then we're like, no, it's a crutch. Tell the story, like, so we like really. I mean, you can talk about it. We decided to make it as hard as possible, but we think in the end, the best possible product.
I think we, you know, like I said, Brooks and I have a lot of the same favorite shows. We always admired the way that like Eastbound and Down.
Yeah, Eastbound and Down, like, that's just a straightforward show, man. I mean, yeah. And just Eastbound and Down and It's Always Sunny were kind of always our North Star. Just like, what would they do, you know?
Yeah. It's just, you know, when you think about network single cameras,
right.
There's not a lot of network single cameras that don't use one of these. It's just something I think about too, because like I have the same instincts you do. If I'm writing a single camera, like I was just write it without the gimmicks and just make it great. And then you see like it's really tough for those shows to break through, especially on network and the things, you know. It's just like Abbott Elementary, it's like it's a mockumentary, you know, or like Black-ish has voiceover and a bunch of other like animation and gimmicky things. Like going back to like My Name Is Earl was like, you know, the single cameras that have worked, Malcolm in the Middle, like they're not just shot like a movie, you know, they're not just like a fast-paced good movie. So it's, you know, it's just I
think we always braced for having to make some sort of concession,
but we never
tried to stick to our guns.
Yeah. And Heidecker, you know, Tim Heidecker is a cool guy who was attached to play Todd in the show and producing it. And, you know, he's got street cred. He doesn't want to be on a dorky, not to say any of those shows were dorky, but he doesn't want to be on a dorky network TV show. So he, you know, he made pretty clear, like, yo, this show has to be like cool. Like, right. And I'm not saying like, hey, Wheeland Motors is the coolest show of all time. I'm just saying like, he was like, no gimmicks, you know?
Yeah. Did anyone ever say like, what's the tone?
Oh yeah. And like,
and what was your answer?
What would our tone be?
Well,
I mean, for me, I would always just be like the tone, like all you need to know is like in the three episodes, the music that plays is, Pantera, White Zombie, and the Cars. Like that to me was the tone. Like Pantera, White Zombie, and the Cars. Like that, like
I think you're giving like execs like too much credit to think that would mean anything to them.
Well, this wasn't even to execs. I don't know. Yeah,
this say this. I think we made a lot of rules for ourselves when we wrote the show, and one of them was that we wanted things to still feel grounded, even if it went into places that were a little slapsticky or something like that. And we wanted, you know, and this was part of our original pitch too. You know, there's not a lot of shows on TV right now that portray the Midwest in a realistic way. And we wanted this show to actually feel like it was set in Iowa. You know, we talk about something where we like Parks and Rec. It's a great show. We never felt like it really took place in
Indiana. Yeah, I lived in Iowa and I watched, you know, like I see the mural on Parks and Rec of them like killing Native Americans, and I'm just like, that doesn't exist, man. That's what like people in Hollywood think the Midwest has. I'm like, no, it'll be a bad mural, but it's not going to be celebrating, you know.
We tried really hard to make it feel like it wasn't just a show written by a bunch of guys that live in Silver Lake, you know. We wanted it to feel very authentic to the experiences that people had in the Midwest. We wanted people in the Midwest to feel like they weren't being punched down on, and that it was something that was very relatable. I mean, there are a lot of references in this.
I mean,
Casey's.
Yeah, the references are pretty heavy. Like, to where afterwards my reps were like, what is breakfast pizza? And I'm like, ask 100 million people in the Midwest. Yeah. It's a fucking thing.
But like, that's why, you know, and that's why we also made a rule that like, we didn't want to have a bunch of pop culture references that were,
oh, yes,
they were extremely outdated.
Zero pop. What were the only pop culture references?
Well, you've got me. They're going to see Bret Michaels, right? Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, Bret Michaels, but he's timeless.
You know? Yeah.
And like, that's real. Like Bret Michaels came, like, these are all very specific stories from growing up where I missed Bret Michaels concert, you know?
Well, we didn't want the show to be filled with, like, for lack of a better term, like kind of like Twitter jokes or something. Like, we wanted these to feel like it was a real, like, self-contained world that took place actually in Iowa.
Yeah, well, you watch Cheers, there are references, but they're, you know, baseball references because he played fucking baseball. You know what I mean? Right. You watch Roseanne, they're not, you know, like, this is like this combined with this. Like, no, Roseanne is just Roseanne, you know, it's taking place in a time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in
no, you don't really want things that immediately date it, you know?
Yeah. We wanted people to be able to watch this show in 20 years and then go on a podcast and talk about why their show didn't work.
Yeah, you know, David Crane on Friends was always like good about like rejecting those super timely references, and the ones that like that slip by are the things that are like, they're going to see Hootie and the Blowfish. They're the most mocked moments exactly on the show is because they're just like such a timestamp. And
although that Hootie episode is like a great time capsule, I love that they go to Hootie.
It is. I mean, I guess it's great in that way, but it's also just so, you know, like of that moment, and it makes it just, you know, kind of dorky. But you're right. You know, like on Cheers, I remember in the pilot of Cheers, they're talking about like, what's the sweatiest movie ever made? Like, you know, Spartacus or, you know, they're like talking about stuff that's not of that exact moment in time. And so it ages really well.
Sometimes you can get like a cheap laugh just from something being like, oh, that's of this moment. And we just didn't want to.
Yeah. We also like, you know, the whole Bret Michaels episode, everyone agrees he rules. You know what I mean? We didn't want anybody. I don't like any of the snark. You know what I mean? Like, be mean to each other, but like, don't be mean to other stuff. Like, I don't know. I really like the idea of like writing stuff that is like, it's easy to write why something sucks. It's harder to write why something rocks. You know what I mean? And I'm always kind of like, I like characters who are excited and they like stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. They could be grumpy, but they freaking love, you know, Pantera, you know, like the other part in the read that I was like, oh, Paul Scheer does not know this Limp Bizkit song. He had not, because it wasn't it Limp Bizkit.
Yeah. He was because to sing something from Nookie.
Yeah. He goes, Nookie. I came into this world as a reject, look into these eyes and after the eyes of the flames. And then when Paul did it, I go, oh, Paul isn't up to date on Limp Bizkit.
Paul's way cooler than us.
Yeah, exactly. Cause like, I'm like, oh no, this is a song.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really actually kind of beautiful. It's like spoken word.
Yeah. It's also so easy to write this world because my brother Brad would do these things, you know, who was based on, and like they're just extreme. Everyone's an extreme version of themselves, except possibly Jim, who might be a toned down version of who my dad is.
Briggs's dad really is.
No, he'll listen to this. Yeah. So he's a very cool guy.
He's a great guy.
But he did get in a fight with the band Styx at his Walmart parking lot, where he sold fireworks.
Mm-hmm. Like, wait, so the whole band walked in? Like,
no, no. It's even crazier. He sleeps in the fireworks tent overnight, so no one robs him. He's too cheap. But then he also complains about how hot it gets because it's the 4th of July. That's the whole pilot, you know? Yeah. So he was sleeping in his fireworks tent, and the tour bus for Styx pulled up next to him because it's free to stay in a Walmart parking lot, and they wouldn't turn their generator off. And he went over to tell him to shut the fuck up. And they were like, we'll knock you out, dude. Like, and so he wrote like a Facebook post attacking Styx, but at the same time, letting everyone know he's living in a Walmart parking lot. That's, you know, that's real. So that's harder, you know, that didn't get into the show because that's too crazy.
Yeah. I'm sure you would have gotten there. Did any of your family watch the recording of the table read? Like, have they read that? Like,
my family is so supportive. They're like, so like, I felt bad for them, you know, like I feel bad for me, but like my nephews, Lincoln, Landon and Layton, like they, I had to like, cause I'd send them the scripts and they would be like, they just looked to see if they got lines. So I had to like sprinkle lines for my nephews to get things, you know what I mean? And one of them, like, he was like, can I be in it? And I was like, for a second, I was like, yeah, there are various minor roles. And then I was like, no, I don't need to hire my nephew to be on a TV show who doesn't live here. But yeah, they were like, they were so stoked. And like, my dad's a pretty harsh critic on like my comedy and the things I do and comedy in general. And he was like, this is the funniest show. Like, I think really, truly believe like if you lived in the Midwest, this show would have hit so hard. He was like, this is very specific. And he really liked it. They liked it a lot. I felt bad for them that it didn't go.
Yeah. It's you know, what's interesting is like the executives, I mean, it seems like your execs you were dealing with really got this and got, you know, and maybe, I don't know where they're from, you know, maybe there are people from the Midwest. It's just like, there, you know, there's always going to be that divide between the actual audience for network TV these days and who the executives at network TV are and like the understanding of that taste. There's a lot of people in the Midwest who are still watching network television, you know, but they may not have their representatives among the gatekeeping ranks.
Julia, who's the head of comedy at the time, she was like in the pitch, she was like, oh, I have a brother who lives in Decorah. I was like, he must work at Luther College. And he did, you know, and it was like, so she had like family there. Maybe she could like send to be like, does this make sense to you guys? Maybe, right. I don't know. If she, but like, and then I know Alana is from like Canada. So at least those two, and they're the two who moved it up and they really wanted to get it made. And then it got, you know, to the final boss.
And I'm sure it was like, there's some factor that is completely, you know, you'll never know what it was that made the difference between those two shows at some super high level that we never are privy to. Mm-hmm. And it could have been the craziest reason, like at the last minute, that just
and
like,
it could
sways
have
them.
Just been someone's gut instinct too. Like, I don't even know if there was a good reason for it.
My feeling is it's probably anything but that. Like, I don't think it's gut instinct anymore. You know, I think it's like some other marketing focus grouped like decision that doesn't come from a gut instinct. I mean, maybe
yes, run it through an algorithm.
Like that it used to be like you had a Brandon Tartikoff or whatever. It's just like, I'm going with my gut. I like this show. It makes me laugh, you know, and then we've sort of gone away from
that's executives. This process made me really kind of appreciate Lorne Michaels in like a whole new way, because what that guy said, what he feels he does, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he hired me on just boom, you're hired. And then like, when it wasn't working, he was like, you're out, you know? And I'm like, I at least like admire that dude is gunslinging, you know what I mean? And I think you're right. I think it's less of gunslinging and more of like, I think Chad, who was helping supervise our first one, and Emily Cutler helped supervise episodes 2 and 3. She rules. But I think Chad was like, let's hope that this sells some soap. Like, like that's
what we're doing. That's cool that Emily's, you know, we've had done one of her dead pilots on the podcast.
Yeah. You did that.
Emily's great.
Emily rules. You did Step Dave.
We did.
And actually, I did an ABC show with the original Step Dave, who was this New Zealand guy, Jono. Oh. He was the Step Dave from
Dave
New Zealand.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, and then so then when I saw she wrote on that, I was like, I know the real Step Dave. Like, that guy's awesome.
So Isaac, something you said at the show, which I really want to get into, which was how much you like this podcast. you know, this episode and all of, you know, three episodes of the show are happening during our annual fun drive. So why don't you just talk a little bit about Dead Pilot Society and what you love about it?
You know, going back to when me and Brooks first started working together and he had more television experience than I did, I put myself through a crash course where, and I'm sure everybody kind of does this at some point, I was like reading all the books you're supposed to read about how to write for TV and comedy and listening to podcasts and things like that. And one of the most valuable things I found was this podcast, because it's, I think, super helpful to hear the stuff that didn't work for other people. And I think you do a great job of going deeper than just, you know, talking about like what happens in a script, but also what happens behind the scenes. and, you know, the inner workings of networks and things like that. So I think there was a period of time where, like, I would wake up in the morning, walk my dog, listen to one of your podcasts, go to Brooke's house, work for 4 hours, go back home, listen to another one of the podcasts, just to, like, kind of get into that rhythm. I mean, like, that John Hodgman episode from very early on was, like, something that I must have listened to, like, 6 or 7 times. I think you had a pilot that I can never remember what it's called. It's the one with the male doula.
The doula,
where I was like, you know, I really loved the story behind it. And then I was like, this is not maybe like a log line that would appeal to me, but the execution was amazing. And I think, yeah, I think this is just such an invaluable podcast for people who, I don't know, sometimes it just feels like you're so siloed. When me and Brooks were working together every day at ABSO, it was like, what else is going on out there? You know, and it would help. We would talk to other writer friends like Joe Mandy, who also had a show going on at Fox at the time. And even just getting a little glimpse into what they were doing helped us to feel a little bit better about what we were doing.
So less fucking crazy.
Yeah. Like, this isn't only happening to us.
Yeah.
You know, and I think your podcast is such a great tool. I recommend it to everybody.
Yeah. Like, when Isaac told me about it, I promise, I said, I hope we never have to go on.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want to have to go on that, man.
The first thing I thought when we got the rejection was, I was like, well, this will be great for Dead Pilot Society.
I was like, shit.
Well, I do. I mean, it does feel good to know that we can be at least like, you know, a consolation prize, like a situation like you, where you guys got so close, you worked so hard. And like, a lot of what you want is just to hear an audience laugh at this, you know,
Stuff. I mean, I'm just excited for people in Iowa to hear. Like, I really am. Like, I'm like, cool. Like, in episodes 2 and 3 to me are more near and dear to my heart than the pilot. And so the fact you let us read all three meant a lot, because here's the other thing about like developing TV, that's like, we all work our whole life on how to write a pilot. And then when they were like, write episodes 2 and 3, I was like, I never written episodes 2 or 3.
Yeah. It's a whole different thing.
It's way different. Yeah. And it is more enjoyable, but it's
so much more enjoyable. I mean, that's the thing. It's just like, you work so much on pilots. Pilots are the worst part of the process, right? It's just like, once you get it out of the way and all the exposition's out of the way and the characters are established, and then you can just like, and you have the voices, because what's so hard is you know, you start writing, you know, you might have, because you're writing people, you know, but sometimes you don't have the voices yet. And it takes the pilot writing process to get the voices. And then once you have them, then it gets fun, because the characters can just start talking. So you at least got to have some of that fun.
Yeah, it meant more fun part. Yeah, and it meant a lot to like be able to, like, in reality, without this freaking podcast, you know, 40 people would have ever read those 3 scripts. You know what I mean? Like, tops, maybe 20. And now, you know, hopefully, you know, I heard that you got, you know, 20s of 30s listeners will get to. No, it's just nice to have it out in the world, and like, I'm excited more than the execs at Fox will get to hear it. And it's really cool.
Yeah, it's like an actual like thing that we can point to now and be like, oh, you can hear it over here, instead of just being like, here's a PDF.
Right.
Listen to Bobby Moynihan read the joke. It's way fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why people should support and become Maximum Fun members, to support what we're doing here.
Or you could spend 2 years in development hell, and they could also help. That's how we're supporting.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You provided us with the material, which, you know, we can't do this without it.
Yeah.
Happy to help. It was really fun. I mean, I laughed a lot that night. It's just like, it's really,
thanks, man.
It's just funny.
Well, we're so grateful for you and your whole team. Like, you guys did such a great job putting that show on.
And I'm proud of our show. I really think we would have had the funniest show on network television. And, you know, I truly believe that. And if I didn't believe that, I shouldn't be in this business. And I might be wrong. And you might have listened to that and you think I'm wrong. But in my head, I love that fucking show, and I'm really bummed we don't get to explore it further, but stoked to, you know, take a new show out and figure it out.
Yeah. Good luck with the new one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't end up back here.
Well, you know what? I had fun. So
yeah.
All right. So if you do, at least there's that.
We're going to actively try to sabotage
this. so you can come back.
If you run out of shit, I would be interested in revisiting. And this is just like, in maybe in a year or whatever, when people are done with us, we'll do our we could do our Midwest best, because that one is pretty fun, but I would want to punch it up. I learned so much through this process. I'd be like, you got to punch it up. You got to punch it up.
Well, cool. The only real repeat, creator on the podcast has been me. Like tons of mine, but no one else gets to do two.
Yeah, I mean, you're also one of the only people who at the end of the interview goes, tell me why I'm good.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for doing this.
Hey, thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having us. We really appreciate it, man.
Thanks so much. So
all right,
much
fun.
And also,
you.
Hey, just a heads up to anyone out there. Isaac and I will write for your show. We will write for fucking Swamp People. We will write for History Channel's Gold Diggers. We will write for American Pickers.
That's the best case.
We need a fucking job. Okay. Thanks for listening. Have a good week.
All right. There you have it. I mean, Isaac said it. I mean, right before, Brooks begged for a job, you heard Isaac spell out why this podcast is worth supporting. He used this podcast to help him learn how to write a comedy pilot, which they sold and came so close to getting on the air. He used this show. I'm sure others have done the same. We want to keep doing this. Maybe you're in it just for the reads, just to laugh. Maybe you're in it for all the great information, the nitty gritty about how pilots are actually conceived, pitched, written, how to deal with notes, all the stuff that we get into. It's only really happening here. Show us some love. We really want to keep doing this. Show the Max Fun staff some love. Remember, Maximum Fun is becoming an employee-owned co-op. It's something you can feel great about supporting. And one more thing, it's very likely there's going to be a writer's strike, which will mean no more original shows will be coming out for a bit. If you support us, we'll still be able to be here bringing you great original comedy. That's not going to be crossing a picket line. That's kosher. All right. One last time, Dead Pilot Society fans. And if you are listening to this after show, you are a fan. Show us some love. Go to MaximumFun.org/join right now and become a member. The people you're supporting here, Dead Pilot Society's team, it's produced by me and Ben Blacker and our associate producer, Noah Findling, and it is edited and mixed by Jordan Katz. We're all real people. We work really hard on this show. Please support us. All right, we will be back next month with the episodes that have the highest likelihood that Barack Obama will listen to. You'll understand when you hear those. One last time. Go to MaximumFun.org/join. All right. Thank you so much. I'm Andrew Reich, and thanks for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.